What if I told you that a $300 handheld Nintendo console just taught multi-billion dollar tech giants how to fix their most powerful state-of-the-art software?
It's honestly a massive shift in how we think about progress.
Right. Because today we are looking at this bizarre reality where the smartest companies on Earth are realizing their technology is actually, suffocating under the weight of its own brilliance.
Exactly. For decades, the assumption in Silicon Valley has just been that bigger, heavier, and flashier naturally equals better. But the data we're looking at today proves the exact opposite.
Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Welcome.
Today, we are taking you through a remarkable late-night tech intelligence briefing from the Tech and Game editorial board. This is dated Friday, August 14, 2026.
Yeah, and this briefing pulls from some seemingly disconnected worlds.
Right, we're talking video game patches, enterprise AI economics, and high-stakes cybersecurity. But our mission for this deep dive is to pull on the single fascinating thread connecting all these updates.
The tension between flashy ambition and raw functional reality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because from Bethesda to Microsoft to Ethereum, the industry is learning that to find true speed, efficiency, and security, you just have to aggressively kill the excess.
And they are largely learning it the hard way. I mean, when you have practically infinite computing power at your disposal, you get sloppy, you stop optimizing.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing a systemic return to form and function.
Okay, so let's start with that Nintendo example because it perfectly illustrates this point. We are talking about the Elder Scrolls 4. Oblivion Remastered.
Right, the big one.
Yeah, this is Bethesda's classic open-world role-playing game, beautifully updated for modern hardware. But for months, players on the most powerful machines on the planet, I mean, high-end PCs, the PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series X, have been dealing with an absolute
Oh,
mess.
it's brutal.
Frame rate drops, driver timeouts, random crashes.
The game was essentially buckling under the weight of its own legacy engine, particularly when players were trying to travel quickly across the open world. The hardware was just choking.
But here is the massive irony. While the PC enthusiasts with their monster graphics cards were suffering, the players on the Nintendo Switch 2, which is, a handheld console you can play on a train, were experiencing an impeccably smooth, locked 60 frames per second presentation. Zero crash reports. How is that physically possible? I mean, the Switch 2 doesn't have a fraction of the raw horsepower of a PS5.
Well, that lack of horsepower is exactly why it succeeded.
Wait, really?
Because of those severe hardware constraints, Bethesda's core architecture team couldn't rely on brute force to make the game run. They had to rewrite the underlying code specifically for that console.
Okay.
Most notably, they built highly specialized geometry culling routines and completely overhauled the VRAM streaming allocation.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's break that down, starting with geometry culling. What does that actually mean in the context of a video game?
So, geometry culling is essentially the game engine's ability to know what you, the player, cannot see, and then actively deciding not to draw it. If you're standing in front of a massive digital castle, the big consoles with their endless processing power were trying to render the back of the castle, the furniture inside the rooms, the guards walking in the courtyard.
Even though you can't see them.
Exactly. But the Switch 2 version was programmed to be ruthless. It said you can only see the front gate, so I'm only mathematically calculating the front gate.
It's like a movie set. A Hollywood crew doesn't build a fully functioning hospital for a scene, they just build the hallway and the doors.
That's a great way to look at it. And the second part of that fix was the VRAM streaming allocation.
Video memory, right?
Yes, VRAM is video memory. The high-end consoles were essentially renting massive moving vans, trying to pack the entire world's high-resolution textures into memory all at once.
Wow. Okay.
It created massive traffic jams, which caused the game to stutter. But the Switch 2 had to pack a tiny suitcase. It only loaded exactly the textures it needed for the next few seconds, swapping them in and out seamlessly.
And it works so well that Bethesda is now officially porting those exact Switch 2 engine fixes upward to the PC, PS5, and Xbox Series console.
Yeah.
They are using the lean, disciplined code forced upon them by a handheld to achieve a pristine 120 Hz native support on the big machines.
It's incredible.
Which brings up a bigger question, really. If this lean code runs better, why do developers build it bloated in the first place?
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like buying a high-end sports car, but realizing the massive cup holder is somehow making the engine stall. In both cases, they are prioritizing raw speed over flashy extras.
What's fascinating here is that constraints are just uncomfortable. If a developer has an endless runway of memory, it's much easier to just dump everything into it rather than meticulously engineering a system to manage it.
Yeah, makes sense.
But that temptation to over-engineer isn't just happening in gaming. Microsoft is going through the exact same realization right now with its enterprise AI interface. The briefing notes they are officially retiring Miko. Miko. Oh, man, for those who might have missed it, Miko was the animated yellow character blob introduced, what, less than a year ago?
Yeah, into Microsoft's flagship Copilot voice interface.
Right. And the whole marketing pitch was about humanizing voice AI. They wanted to inject some warmth and playfulness into your interactions with this, you know, cold neural network.
And if you were just a casual user asking for a recipe at home, it was charming. But Microsoft is now pulling Miko out of the main interface entirely. They're hiding the blob away in their gamified educational modules.
And the reason is latency, right?
Latency.
Wait, a tiny yellow blob on the screen was slowing down a massive AI.
More than you'd think, honestly. Rendering that whimsical 3D WebGL avatar requires what we call computational overhead.
Okay.
Even if it looks simple, rendering real-time 3D graphics in a browser or app steals processing cycles away from the primary task. When enterprise professionals are using Copilot Voice for serious productivity like parsing a spreadsheet or drafting a contract on a deadline, that rendering overhead was creating an unacceptable delay.
So they are trading the cute 3D animation for a sober, minimalist interface just to reduce the speech synthesis latency to under 200 milliseconds.
Exactly. When you're working, every single millisecond counts.
Yeah.
In fact, the Taken Game briefing includes a rather pointed quote from the Human-Computer Interaction Institute about this. They noted that retiring Miko confirms enterprise professionals demand instant, frictionless utility rather than animated anthropomorphic novelties in mission-critical environments.
Which is such an academic way of saying, stop giving us cartoons when we are trying to do our jobs.
Pretty much.
And history really repeats itself here. I mean, we saw Microsoft Bob in 1995. We saw Clippy, the paperclip, in 1997. Cortana in 2014. Microsoft keeps trying to give its software a face, and the professional market just keeps swatting it away, asking for raw speed instead.
It clearly illustrates Microsoft's transition from speculative consumer experimentation to highly disciplined enterprise monetization. The corporate world doesn't want an animated friend. It wants a lightning-fast tool.
Right. Now, if Microsoft is aggressively cutting the fat on the user interface to save a few milliseconds, it's nothing compared to the absolute surgery happening on the back end of the broader artificial intelligence industry to save millions of dollars.
Oh, absolutely.
Which brings us to the generative AI pioneer writer and their new flagship model, Palmyra X6.
This development is going to cause a massive disruption to the enterprise landscape. Right now, the foremost obstacle to widespread autonomous AI agent adoption isn't that the AI isn't smart enough.
Okay, what is it?
It's that the cloud computing expenses are astronomical. Scaling these systems for thousands of employees is just ruinously expensive for most businesses.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We are constantly bombarded with news about AI models getting bigger, like more parameters, larger training sets, massive nuclear-powered data centers. But this report on Palmyra X6 sounds like the exact opposite philosophy. Is the true future of AI not about being smarter, but simply being cheaper to run?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes. Because if we look at the numbers, Palmyra X6 is slashing operational token expenditures by 52% compared to its competitors.
Wow, over half.
Yeah. To run 1,000 complex agent tasks, it costs $12.40 on Palmyra X6. Compare that to OpenAI's GPT-4o Enterprise, which sits at $25.50, or Anthropic's Claude 3.5 Sonnet at $28.80. Writer has essentially cut the cost in half.
Okay, wait. I have to push back here. If they are cutting the token consumption by 38%, how are they not just lobotomizing the AI? I mean, if it's thinking less, shouldn't the output be worse?
You'd think so, but domain accuracy actually improved by 10% across complex legal and financial benchmarks, and hallucination rates are restricted to below 1.2%.
That's insane.
Right? The secret isn't in changing the brain of the AI. It's entirely in the execution harness.
The execution harness. Walk me through that.
Okay, let's visualize the AI's context window. It's short-term memory, like a chef working on a tiny cutting board. When a traditional AI agent does a multi-step task, like researching a company and parsing a financial document, it historically puts every single ingredient, every recipe card, and every tool on that board all at once.
Sounds messy.
It is. It has to constantly read the clutter to remember what it's doing. And every time it reads that clutter, it burns a token. That is high token burn.
Okay, so what does Ryder's new harness do differently?
Ryder upgraded the harness to act like a master sous chef. It eliminates redundant tool calling tokens by handing the AI exactly what it needs, the exact second it needs it, and then instantly clearing the board.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the AI doesn't have to keep rereading its own instructions over and over. Less clutter on the board means faster cooking.
And because it's wasting less thought navigating its own clutter, it's also dramatically faster. The briefing notes a 48% increase in inference throughput, so it's half the price, uses roughly a third less computational fuel, and moves almost twice as fast.
It proves a vital point: sustainable enterprise AI scaling depends entirely on this kind of architectural engineering. Simply expanding a model's parameters hits a wall of diminishing returns. Trimming the excess compute is what actually unlocks profitable deployment for real-world businesses.
But there is a dark side to this massive enterprise scale, isn't there? When you centralize all that highly efficient AI and data onto global interconnected servers, you create the ultimate honeypot. You are putting all your corporate intelligence in one place.
Yep.
And right now, the very tool used to manage those massive servers has a backdoor wide open.
This is where the reality of technical complexity really shows its teeth. International cybersecurity teams are sounding a global alarm regarding the VMware vCenter server.
Yeah, the flaw is logged as CVE-2026-59310. It is a maximum severity CVSS 9.8 remote code execution vulnerability. And honestly, the scariest word in the report is unauthenticated.
That unauthenticated part is exactly what makes it a 9.8. It means an attacker doesn't need to steal a password or phish an employee or guess a PIN code to get in. The vulnerability allows network attackers to execute arbitrary system commands with root privileges directly across exposed management ports.
So for anyone who isn't managing a data center, VMware vCenter is basically the centralized dashboard that controls everything. It manages the virtual machines, the hypervisors, the massive storage arrays. It holds the keys to the entire kingdom.
Literally everything.
So what does this all mean for you? It sounds like installing a 10-ton impenetrable vault door on the front of a bank, but leaving the manager's side door wide open to the street. How on earth does a 9.8 severity flaw exposing the management plane to the public internet even happen?
This raises an important question about the tension between convenience and security. IT administrators want to be able to manage their global server clusters from anywhere. They want remote access.
Sure.
So they leave a port listening for commands. And this specific flaw allows threat actors to establish what's called a covert reverse SSH tunnel.
Let's decode that. A standard firewall blocks incoming bad traffic, right? So how does a reverse SSH tunnel bypass the perimeter firewall?
Think of a standard firewall like a security guard at the front door of an office building.
Right.
The guard's job is to block anyone who isn't on the guest list from coming in. But the guard usually ignores people who are leaving the building.
Right.
A reverse SSH tunnel exploits this. The attacker sends a malicious packet that tricks the server inside the building into making an outgoing call to the hacker's computer.
It's like a vampire. It can't come in unless it's invited. But the vulnerability tricks the server into sending the invitation out.
That's a brilliant way to put it. The server reaches out to the attacker, opening a secure tunnel from the inside out. Once that tunnel is open, the attacker just rides it back inside.
And the guard doesn't notice?
Nope. It looks like standard encrypted outgoing traffic to the firewall, so the security guard ignores it. And they use these persistent backdoors for automated exfiltration of Active Directory credentials, proprietary databases, and cryptographic secrets.
The telemetry in the briefing is grim: 361 enterprise IP addresses compromised across 47 countries already. The tech and game history matrix compares this to the catastrophic log4j vector of 2021, which hit over 20,000 nodes. So how do you actually fix an architectural flaw this deep?
The absolute necessity here is air gapping. Broadcom released security patches, sure, but the deeper lesson is structural. You cannot expose virtualization management consoles directly to the public internet.
Yeah.
Air gapping literally means there is a physical gap of air between the computer and the internet. No Wi-Fi, no Ethernet cable connecting to the outside world. If you want to manage the server, you physically have to be on the internal closed network. The convenience of remote management is fundamentally outweighed by the risk.
But even if you perfectly air-gap your servers, the final reports in tonight's briefing prove that the real world is messy. Sometimes the greatest vulnerabilities aren't in the code at all. They are in physical reality or, you know, born from theoretical overcomplication.
Yes, the decentralized finance space had a very rough wake-up call today regarding exactly that. Two major developments perfectly encapsulate this physical reality check. Let's look at Trezor first.
Trezor is one of the premier hardware wallet manufacturers in the world. People buy these physical USB-like devices specifically because they want their cryptocurrency private keys kept offline air-gapped, away from the digital chaos we just talked about.
Exactly.
The cryptographic silicon inside a Trezor is arguably some of the most secure commercial tech available.
And to be clear, the silicon wasn't breached. The math holds up perfectly.
Right, but Trezor suffered a massive data leak anyway. It wasn't a hack on their code. It was a third-party logistics supply chain breach via their fulfillment partner, a shipping company called Shipmunk.
Nearly 14,000 customer records were stolen, specifically the names, phone numbers, email addresses, and the full physical delivery addresses of 11,742 buyers.
Let me get this straight. Trezor builds an ultra-secure crypto fortress that could take a supercomputer thousands of years to crack, but it's completely bypassed because a shipping guy leaked the mailing list.
Exactly. Because when your home address leaks, the threat model completely shifts from the digital world to the physical world.
Oh, weird.
The attackers don't need to break the AES encryption on the device anymore. They know where you sleep. This severely heightens the risk of targeted phishing or, worse, what the crypto community morbidly calls the $5 wrench attack.
The ultimate analog exploit. Someone shows up at your front door with a wrench and physically demands the PIN code to your wallet.
It exposes critical vulnerabilities and physical hardware distribution supply chains that exist entirely outside the cryptographic map. It doesn't matter how complex your digital security is. A system is truly only strong as its weakest real-world link.
And speaking of complex cryptographic math, this physical reality check pairs perfectly with what's happening over at the Ethereum Foundation. They just made a historic pivot that completely aligns with this theme of trimming the excess.
They did. For 8 years, the Ethereum Foundation has been pouring multi-million dollar research into something called the Poseidon hash function.
Right.
This was an incredibly complex algebraic design intended for post-quantum zero-knowledge proofs. They call them ZK rollups.
Let's clarify what a hash function actually does for a layman. It's basically a one-way mathematical blender, right? You put data in, hit blend, and you get a unique string of numbers and letters.
Yep.
You can't unblend it to see the original data, but you can verify it matches.
That is a very solid summary.
Yeah.
And the Poseidon hash was the bleeding edge of that concept. They were trying to build math so profoundly complex that not even a theoretical future quantum computer could break it. It was highly speculative, highly ambitious engineering.
But today, they announced they are abandoning Poseidon entirely. And Ethereum is dropping nearly a decade of advanced math to just go back to the basics. Why?
What's fascinating here is that recent breakthroughs in other technologies, specifically things called Binius and Circle Starks, actually made those complex algebraic hashes redundant.
Oh, interesting.
They realized they didn't need the theoretical complexity to achieve the security they wanted. As the Tekken editorial board pointed out, they are returning to industry-standard, battle-tested cryptographic primitives, namely the SHA and Blake algorithms. Proven simplicity and end-to-end vigilance always supersede speculative, over-engineered designs.
It's all connected. The entire tech ecosystem is experiencing a massive reality check. Let's just look at the journey we've taken today. We started with Bethesda realizing they had to fix clunky video game performance by actually utilizing the lean, disciplined constraints forced upon them by a handheld Nintendo console.
Yeah.
Then we watched Microsoft strip away a distracting animated 3D avatar because enterprise users value raw, low-latency speed over a cute interface.
We saw the generative AI industry pivot from boasting about massive resource-heavy models to focusing on execution harness efficiency.
Right.
Writer's Palmyra X6 is slashing computational overhead by being smart about how it manages its own context window, not just by adding more parameters.
Then we stared into the abyss of the VMware vCenter exploit, a grim reminder that highly complex internet-facing management infrastructures are ticking time bombs. Sometimes, the only true security is the simplicity of a physical air gap.
And finally, the cryptocurrency space proved that all the advanced digital encryption in the world means nothing if your logistics partner leaks your home address, which naturally mirrored Ethereum abandoning speculative algebraic math for battle-tested standard cryptography.
So what's the overarching lesson for you here? Whether you are managing a sprawling corporate data center, trying to scale an AI workflow, or just trying to boot up a video game on a Friday night, maturity in technology isn't about adding features.
No, it's not.
It isn't about the endless pursuit of more. True maturity is about trimming the excess, It's about respecting operational constraints, acknowledging the messy reality of the physical world, and rigorously protecting the simple, functional core of your systems.
The flashy ambition we saw in the early 2020s is finally giving way to the disciplined, functional reality of 2026.
Which leaves us with a final, rather provocative thought to mull over. If our most advanced systems right now, from hyper-intelligent AI agents to post-quantum cryptography to the very engines that render our digital worlds, are increasingly relying on stripping away complexity to find true security and true efficiency, what does that mean for the next generation of revolutionary tech?
That's a great question.
Will the biggest breakthroughs of the 2030s not be about inventing shiny new things at all, but simply mastering the basic foundations we are clearly still struggling with today? It is something to think about the next time you're sold a piece of software that promises to do everything. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, look past the flash, and keep questioning the technology you rely on every single day.